What up, everybody? It is 10 a.m. in the District of Columbia. Points north, south, east, and west. You're listening to B. Mitch and Finley. Last day we're in a tent live in Ashburn, Virginia. They take all the tents out tomorrow. So this is it, baby.
Yeah, we're not sitting in the back of your truck with no tent. No, that's not going to happen.
We'll see. We'll see.
No, we're not going to see.
You won't sit
that's
in the back
one
of my
thing
truck.
We won't see.
We won't see Brian.
It won't
in the back
be
of
we.
The truck. Yeah. I don't think we're going to get back to back of the truck status. I think we've moved forward. Good morning, B.
What's
how you
up,
doing?
Brother? I'm chilling, man. How you doing? How was your taping last night?
It was cool, man. It was fun. Shout out to Los Rhino. Took good care of us. Had a bunch of Skins fans or Commanders fans showed up. I happened to notice a lot of folks were wearing their McLaurin jersey. Mm-hmm. I feel like it was a good day to wear a Terry jersey.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
B, you know what they were serving? It was burger night at Los Rhino. Mm. You know elote, the like Mexican corn?
Yeah, yeah.
They had a burger with elote on it. Uh-huh. Elote bacon burger.
Man.
It was banging.
That could be good.
Here's how you know it was good. I finished all of it.
Oh, you did?
I was hungry.
Was it small?
Nah, it was like a regular
okay,
burger.
Okay, just make sure.
Yeah,
know,
man. I did good.
You like to do the Junior Whopper?
I if they had a Junior version of it, I might have gotten it.
Whopper Junior be too big for you, though. You need the grandson.
I like the Whopper Junior, man. The Whopper Junior is perfect. I don't know if they have like a Whopper Junior, but
that's the best thing you get.
B, when I was in high school, by my senior year of high school, we'd go up to. Do you remember when the Bethesda Metro had that food court? All right, that might have been
the Bethesda Metro.
Like eventually, you worked right there for a while, but you were still playing when
I was
graduating
going to
high
the
school.
Metro, though.
But you wouldn't have gone to the Metro. There was a food court with like a ton of restaurants. Like a food court at a mall.
Right next to it?
Yeah, it was like right by the old office.
Tommy Joe's was right there, wasn't it?
It was like, you know where what is now the Clark Construction Building, where that Hyatt is? Where the
Morton's
is?
Yeah.
The building next to it used to have a food
court. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And so we'd go there every day in high school for lunch. My standard lunch, I mean, I'm a real bastion of health at this point, at 17 years old or whatever, was a Whopper Jr. and a slice of pizza. And I think collectively that cost me like $3.50.
That's why you played offensive line. I understand.
Because the Whopper Jr. was a buck. I remember that. It was 99 cents. That's you on five. Last night was really cool. It was fun. It was also cool to be able to like do the show live after Terry is back and has talked and is clearly excited and everybody's happy. And it feels like finally – we're seeing the team the way they had it planned.
Yeah.
Even yesterday, just seeing Terry and Noah Brown out there, and I'm not saying that Noah Brown is the same player as Terry, but like
Noah
this
Brown
offense
does what he does.
Way better when he's your third wideout.
He brings a different element to the game that the other receivers don't.
Physicality, yeah. I mean, just all of it. You hope he can stay healthy. I mean, that's been kind
of
his problem throughout his career, but It was a lot of fun. It was cool to really get to listen to Terry. I don't know what you had going on yesterday afternoon. Did you get to hear any of his comments?
Nope. I was on the golf course.
How'd you play?
I played weird.
Weird.
I had a little – couldn't get off the tee. I was pulling yanking it all day yesterday.
Left?
Yeah, but I ended
up – I feel like when you miss, that's your
miss. I ended up fixing it.
It's funny, man, because your game, if I can't get off the tee, I'm just cooked. But your game, you can't get off the tee, you generally are still in for, like, par or bogey.
I had some shots yesterday where
– where'd you guys play?
Canada Club.
Canada Club?
I hit the pin on several chips that I'm like, trying to – I'm trying to save a par or bogey, and boom, I'm almost making them, you know. So, and I didn't play too bad, but – Not like I had been playing.
Gotcha. Commanders make a couple moves yesterday. Now, at this point, it's kind of practice squad stuff.
Yeah.
They added a corner, Darius Rush. And then, interestingly, I'd say they added a running back in Donovan Edwards. You already kept four running backs on your active roster, and then you're adding another one.
Is he on the active roster?
No, he's going to the practice squad.
Yeah, yeah.
But now you got your five deep at the at the corner position. Rush is a guy that was drafted in 23 by the Colts, got cut out of camp, has played a sprinkle. He's played five games over two seasons with the Steelers. Long guy, which for a defensive back, you know, I think there's a I think DQ and Joe Witt have a type as far as defensive backs go. So Darius Rush kind of fits that, 6'2", long arms. He is a Gamecock, played his college ball at South Carolina. Edwards is a little more interesting to me, just because I think that was somebody they were kind of keeping tabs on. Going practice squad to add another running back, I find kind of interesting. Edwards was good in college at Michigan. Had a good preseason with the Jets and, you know, just got released. I think that's just about it's a player they like and they're putting him on the practice squad more so than any sort of, like, big picture.
But you're having four running backs. I mean, that's you got to practice the whole year. And the guys, two of those running backs, you expect them to play a lot of special teams, maybe three.
Yeah.
That's a lot of wear and tear. So you get an extra guy in here just to save them a little bit.
Fair.
Yeah.
The practice squad, I don't know, we could count. Barber, Brooks, Cager, Day, Dieter, five. Edwards, Hamilton, Hartman, Holmes, Jones, 10. TJ, McDaniel, McKay, Moore, Rush, Vigors, 16.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it 17?
It's 17.
Is that what the international?
There's an international pathway thing that I don't know if that is full right now, although maybe, forgive me, TJ Magaranyaga.
He could be it.
That might be their IPP guy, right? So roster's really starting to take shape, and in some ways, you don't want to minimize everything we've been out here watching and analyzing for the last 6 weeks, but it also makes you realize, like, between now and next week is when it really starts to matter. You know what I mean? Like, the end of camp makes you realize, like,
But you analyze the 90 that try to get top 70.
Right.
And then once you get the top 70, you're concerned about the 53 that has a chance to be active that week. And then you worry about the 47 on Sunday that are going to be dressed out. It's understandable. I mean, it's not to limit it or discredit it, but you have certain levels of what you're looking at. You know, let's weed out the top 20 that we have to get out of here. And then when you get close to the game, you got to get 17 more are not going to have a chance to play this week. And then right when you get close to the game, you got another six that are not going to be dressing out. And it comes down to health, just what the game plan is that week. You know, you may have somebody on practice squad that you know plays well against a certain style of look, and you may want that guy up that week. You never know.
Sure.
And that's the luxury of having it right now.
Yeah. I mean, that is one of the best rule changes for actual players the NFL has made in a while. And, dude, it's a give and take because they also added a 17th game, right? Mm-hmm. But it gives you way more roster flexibility. So the Commanders are really starting to kind of flush everything out. Today we're going to hear from Dan Quinn at noon. Then we should hear from Jaden Daniels. We're hoping that happens in our show, 1:30, 1:45-ish. But we won't know. It kind of depends, you know, how late practice goes and how quick Jaden gets up to the podium, et cetera. It is an awesome weekend because it's week one for college football. I just went through. There's like nine games tonight.
You watching the night check?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're driving to the beach, but I like to think by the time we get there, I'll be, you know, kids will go to sleep. Like, now some of these games, B, I'm not going to lie to you, I don't have a real feel for Lafayette versus Bowling Green. Do you have much of a
That's kind of like a rivalry, right?
I don't think so, but maybe.
Lafayette, Indiana, right?
No, Lafayette's Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
I thought it was a Lafayette, Indiana.
There might be, but I believe Lafayette College is in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, but, you know, hey, man, college football. You're going to see some excitement.
Sure. Well, Boise State, South Florida, kicks off at 5:30. Like, that's a good game.
Where is it at?
It appears to
be on the blue field or somewhere else?
It looks like it's in Tampa.
Okay, good. That blue field throws me off.
You know what I believe I know about Lafayette College?
Right.
I believe, I hope I don't have this mixed up with another small school in Pennsylvania, but I think that's where Gary Williams started his basketball coaching career.
Wasn't it IUP?
No. And the other even more incredible part about that, of where Gary started his basketball coaching career, the way he's told the story, they didn't have enough money just to hire a basketball coach, so we had to coach basketball and soccer.
Yeah, he coached soccer too. I remember that story.
I love that. So, you know what? I'm rooting for Lafayette tonight. Sorry.
See, now you got a, now you got a dog in the fight.
Sorry, Bowling Green. Boise State, South Florida is the game. Ohio, Rutgers. Should you be interested in that? Not Ohio State, Rutgers. Ohio and Rutgers. I think East Carolina, NC State could be a good game tonight. I know Mathers will be watching that. Wickstead will be watching his Pirates. I'm trying to see if there's any other. Like, I don't think there's a lot of. Here's the headliner, B.
What's that?
Nebraska versus Cincinnati.
All right.
That's.
But it's Thursday night.
Right. There's big stuff coming.
You're going to be watching.
What in the hell conference is Cincinnati in now? Big 12?
I couldn't tell you.
I think they're in the Big 12 now.
I mean, all of them is going to end up just being one big thing. I don't know.
I don't know how that's all going to shake out. But, I mean, there's college football all weekend. The headlines are obviously later on in the weekend. Saturday is just a wild, awesome day of college football. I believe we're going to get Denton Day on with us a little later to preview college football. Of course, you know, Denton does all his college football shows on Sirius. Coming up in a few minutes, we're going to check in on the Giants. We've been checking in around the NFC East this week. Dan Duggan covers the Giants for The Athletic, going to join us in a few minutes. Terry spoke yesterday at length, and we finally saw him smiling and enjoying himself, and he was, like, laughing and joking with us. It seemed very much like
a relief.
Yeah, and you know, for me, I can't stress enough that when we were at Eastern Motors, you saw it, you talked to him, we were there for hours, and Terry was there for hours, shooting commercials, whatever. Mm-hmm. And Terry was himself throughout. And then when we sat down for the actual media availability, you could tell there was some frustration. But, like, when the media availability ended, he dapped us all up, said, thanks for coming, I appreciate you guys. Like, Terry, the person, is still just the same good dude cut from the right cloth. Mm-hmm. And I think that showed out yesterday. And I think if you're Terry and you know that Tuesday morning when you sign a contract, if the creek rises and all hell breaks loose, you are at least $45 million richer. I think everybody's cool.
Hey, man, my whole thing is, at this point, he went from one tax bracket. Well, he's in the same tax bracket, but his account went up, and it's all that matters. And the thing of it is, whenever you can better things for yourself, your family, whatever you have presented, that's a winner. It's a good thing. I look at all the stuff, and I know how people break stuff down. As I look at it, he's in a great position right now financially. And depending on how this whole contract thing works out, if he's still going here and this team love him, cool. If not, he's a free agent. When he becomes a free agent, things change. Salary caps go up. You know what I'm saying? And all that type of thing. But my main concern is Terry McLaurin signed a contract with Washington. And that's what my focus is. I'm focused on looking at him play for this team and do things he's been doing since he's gotten here. I can care less about all the other stuff, the other outside stuff to try to make things look differently. Two people came together, two entities came together, and finalized a deal that made the team better. It's all that matters.
And I truly believe it's water under the bridge now at this point. I don't think players were caught up in it, especially because
the players never got caught up in it.
Well, dude, while we didn't see him practicing, he was in the building with those guys. Like, he's largely been here.
And most of the stories and most of the things were speculations. Wasn't nothing no player was saying or what was going on. Players basically tried to stay away from other people's contract out. Every once in a while, if you look around the whole league, how many times have you really, of all the people in the league, you got 1,800 people, how many times have you heard a player really discuss like, well, we need to. He need to come on into camp. He can't be worried about money. You haven't heard that. If you heard it maybe one time, it doesn't happen.
It is.
Even if they got something to say, they keep their mouth shut, which is best.
I bet it's like 95%.
What if you say something about a player that can whoop your ass when you come back in the locker room? You know what I mean? It's just like.
I love that that's always where your mind
No. I'm just saying. it goes there a lot because let's be real. Every time you see a football team walk out, hooray together, don't mean they never had any scuffles and things going on in the locker room. But players, you might say something about another player's contract and you might piss off his boy or piss off another guy just by saying, worry about your own business.
Right.
You know, and I think a lot of people outside the locker room try to imagine or want to act like they think they know what goes on. No. The players don't give a damn for the most part. They worry about their own. Because as soon as you start talking about somebody else's contract, wait till yours come up.
Right.
Then they're going to start discussing yours. Then it's going to be a problem.
Well, and it's like, I mean, I think it's important to say this. Like, the media is generally in the locker room 3 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You generally get to be in there. Some days it's 30 minutes. Some days it's 80 minutes. But generally there's like a block of time. Call it an hour a day for 3 days a week. How long are players in the locker room per week? Like 4 hours a day over 5 days?
To be honest with you, yeah, about that. Because like you think the locker room is where the players basically go in and get dressed and go to a meeting room.
Or
go in to get dressed and go outside.
Go eat.
Yeah, go eat. Come back in. Get undressed to get dressed to go home or go to a meeting.
Right.
They're not in the locker room very often, but that time in the locker room is sacred.
Right.
Very sacred.
And I just think it's like we get a snapshot, but to try to make any definitive declarations from a snapshot is not always going to be accurate. You know what I'm saying?
Like it's
– And I know enough that, like, we don't know – like, people are like, oh – like, I've seen enough players over the years walk in and be like, oh, media's here.
But
and
they,
so then it's like
you know what that means?
They got the media hour.
Temper what we do.
Right, exactly.
Like, you may see some things where they're comfortable doing it.
Right.
But for the most part, they temper what they really do once you walk in. And they know what time the media's in.
Right.
They know when different eyes are in there.
It's written on the monitors when they're
but,
like
but
all around the building.
They have different – when different eyes come in, they understand. They know what's going on. Just like any other club you have, I don't care what the club is, you know, for sorority, fraternities, or you got some type of little social club. When everybody that's in the club is there, it's a certain freedom you have. When somebody that's not in the club walks in, you get guarded. It's natural. It's just like people try to make athletes so much different. Just think about what the hell you do with you and your friends. You know, I think any person out there, when you are with your best friends, you let your guard down. When anybody walks in, they may be, if your friend brings somebody in, yeah, he brought this person in, that's my boy, but I don't know this dude over here. You hold back a little bit until you find out the other person is cool. And most times, guys, like, you got into the media. When you first walked in, they didn't treat you like they treat you now.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? I think people try to make it so different. It's because you're not there. Just think about how you are with your close groups of people.
I think the page has been completely turned for Terry. It's also interesting. The first practice after roster cuts is always a little weird. It's usually pretty subdued. I had somebody from the organization mention that to me yesterday just because you could hear how quiet it was out there. One, you have 20 less guys, so there's like an inherent loss of that volume. But you could, like, I think vets try to be cool to young guys because they know that they probably just stressed out getting a phone call for the last 48 hours. It's just like a.
Right now, they know this is what counts. It's business now.
Right.
We need you. And believe me, next week, it'll pick up a little bit more.
Right.
You know, like you remember Dan was saying that Dan said he hated Monday and Tuesday. Prior to it, he said that. You hear a lot of coaches say that. Veteran players say it. Hell, young players, I know that there is. It got to be demoralizing to them. I've been out this game for 20-something years, and I still feel super, super bad at this time of the year. Because, you know, somebody's dream has been just shattered. It's going to be shut down.
When we return, let's check in on the New York Football Giants with our guy Dan Duggan, covers the Giants for The Athletic. Nobody go anywhere. B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. All week we've been checking in around the NFC East, and we're going to keep that going, checking in with the New York Giants. Big Blue Dan Duggan covers the Giants for The Athletic. You can give him a follow at D. Duggan, D-U-G-G-A-N, 21 on Twitter, joining us via the Rude Guest Hotline. Dan, thanks for making some time, man. How's everything up there in the Meadowlands?
Yeah, it's going well. I'm just making my way to the facility, so if I have to deal with some honking horns and cursing on these New Jersey and New York highways, I'll try to keep it a minimum. On my end, but I can't promise the other drivers will be the same.
All good, man. All Ben, good.
How good did Dart look?
I mean, you saw him. He looked great. You know, how much of the Giants preseason you watched, anytime he's out there on the preseason field, you know, he looked like the second coming. Day-to-day in camp, there was, you know, probably more ups and downs than, you know, when the lights are on. But I would say the thing he did is just checked every box. And not in a situation like Washington was last year where, like, the starting job was even, you know, an option or the plan. It's always been this longer, deliberate plan. He's going to sit behind Russell Wilson. So, I mean, nothing he did this summer changed that necessarily, but I definitely think it might have shortened the leash for Russell Wilson and probably, you know, might expect the timeline for Dart because, you know, it's preseason. You never know exactly what to make of that, but he certainly looked ready, and it's now just a matter of time until he gets on the field and has a chance to prove it.
Well, I guess the other side of that coin then is how did Russ look?
He looked like Russ. You know what I mean? I don't think anyone came in with any illusions of this is, you know, the mid-2010s Russ from Seattle, you know, going to the Super Bowl and stuff like that. I mean, this guy's been, was 14 in 5 years, Hall of Fame coach after Hall of Fame coach keeps moving on from him. Yeah. And there's reasons for that. I mean, I think there's limitations that you see in terms of, you know, he's obviously always been a smaller guy, but he's able to overcome that, you know, with mobility and stuff like that, and that's definitely declined. At the same time, he's a veteran quarterback. He's seen every look. He's been through everything. So in training camp, he's going to come out here and he's not going to look bad. You know what I mean? He looks very confident. Mm-hmm. I covered the end of Eli Manning, even when, you know, his play was on decline. He still looked good in practices, you know. So I think we'll see for real when the rush is live and, you know, you're going against another opponent. But, I mean, I think he looked exactly what you expected. Like, he looks like a competent NFL veteran quarterback.
So elsewhere on that offense, Malik Nabers looks like he's a future all-pro, just superstar. But I know he had a really weird camp with injuries. What's the latest with Nabers?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think they just kind of kept him in bubble wrap. I mean, a lot of these injuries were kind of hard to nail down. Like, it wasn't like anything you saw happen. It was, and he missed all the spring with a toe injury that apparently dates back to college, even though it never really slowed him down at all his rookie year. Right. Then it was a shoulder, he missed it there, too. I think anytime he said the word out, like, all right, you're down for 4 days. Because, like, when you look at the skill players on this roster, it's basically him and everybody else. So if he misses any time, I think they know they're pretty much screwed. So they were not going to risk anything. He doesn't need anything to prove anything. When he was on the field this summer, he looked even better than last year, which was hard to believe because he was so dynamic as a rookie. So, yeah, I think it was just let's get, you know, him and Dexter Lawrence, guys like that, let's just get them to the opener. They don't need all the reps. And now that we're, you know, coming up on the season, and Nabers appears to be full go.
There seems to be a lot of talk about the Giants' defense, that they're going to be getting as good as they were back in the past. And you got Abdul Carter there, Dexter Lawrence you just mentioned. How good are those guys looking as the season approaches?
Well, I'll say this. If they're going to have any success, if they're going to, you know, overachieve, it's going to be based on the defense. Like, you know, again, I think we kind of know what Russ is. The offense, I think, is not going to be some explosive unit. The defense has a chance to be really good, and obviously it starts up front, and you mentioned the Giants' history. They obviously have a blueprint here where they've seen it work in the past, so they kind of went all in on it this year. When, you know, they're sitting there at three, there was a no-brainer to take Abdul Carter, but then you just add him to the pieces they have. It's already, you know, adding to a strength where you have Dexter Lawrence, you have Brian Burns, you have Kayvon Thibodeau. Like, that's a pretty formidable foursome up front on third downs. I'd say the problem is, or the question is, can they get to about a third and eight and second and 12s? Because the run defense has been bad for a couple of years. For all of Abdul Carter's talent, he doesn't necessarily upgrade that so much. So they need to be better on first down and have second and eight and then third and six so they can unleash, you know, all these exotic packages. Because I do think if they're playing with the lead or if they're getting teams in third and long, they are going to be tough to stop because I don't know how you match up with these guys because I think the thing that separates Carter is he can line up anywhere, and you'll see it. You know, week one, he'll be playing off ball, he'll be on the edge, he'll be in the three technique. So having a guy like that who's such a weapon, I think opens up everything else. You have to pick your poison. You're going to chip the edge guys. You're going to double decks. Like, someone's going to be one-on-one. And I think they have confidence all four of these guys will thrive, you know, when they get those matchups.
So they use him like the Cowboys use, basically, Micah Parsons.
100%. I mean, like, the parallels are, like, almost too obvious. You try to think of something else, but no, that's who it is. I mean, obviously, the number 11 at Penn State, the guy who comes into the league and fills all these roles. And, of course, Micah eventually just became, you know, an edge rusher 90% of the time, whatever it is, because he's just so good at that. And I think that's what will happen to Carter. But you bring him into a situation where, obviously, they paid a ton of money and made the trade for Burns, and they have Kayvon. They still have a lot invested in him in terms of he was a number 5 pick a couple years ago. So where would Abdul Carter fit? The fact that you can't move him around, I think, makes it pretty smooth this year. But I think he's going to be so good off the edge, it'll probably make a discussion next year of what happens to Kayvon. I mean, they have his fifth-year option. Maybe he becomes a trade piece. I'll be any three. One of these guys is not going to be the odd man out. And I think Carter might have the highest ceiling for sure. So if he's as good as advertised, you know, that makes somebody expendable. But for this year, it's a good problem to have because you just have three really talented pass rushers, and Carter's versatility allows you to get them all on the field.
Yeah, I mean, he was so good, especially in the college football playoffs. He had, like, one arm. Wasn't his shoulder broken or something for Penn State?
Yeah.
I mean, that was crazy. Talking with Dan Duggan here on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude makes the most dependable HVAC equipment in the DMV. If you want to give Dan a follow, learn more about the Giants, you can at dduggan21, D-U-G-G-A-N. I follow him. I recommend it. You know, if you look at the Giants' season last year, it started poorly, it went worse. Offensively, they were god awful. I mean, the quarterback position was such a hole. Everything we hear is Daboll's really focused on starting fast. They, you know, playing more guys deep into the preseason. Week one is, I don't know, 8 days away now or something. How is New York approaching playing Washington in the first game of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think you laid out something. I mean, they have to get off to a fast start because it has been like Murphy's Law the last couple openers. They got beat 40-0 by the Cowboys a couple years ago at home. It was coming off that unexpected playoff season, too, so it just took all the air out of the balloon immediately. Andrew Thomas, their star left tackle, hurt his hamstring in that game, chasing after a blocked field goal to return for a touchdown. I mean, that was as bad as it gets. And then you come out last year, all right, now it's time to bounce back. You get Minnesota. Obviously, we didn't know what Minnesota would become. And they came into MetLife and beat them bad. I think it was 28-6. You're talking 68-6 the last two openers, and it wasn't as if those were aberrations. They began slides. I mean, obviously, they never recovered either year. There were 6 wins 2 years ago, 3 wins last year. So it wasn't just a slight blip. I think they obviously every team wants to start 1-0, but I think it's just really, really important because for a team coming off of a 3-14 disaster, the vibes are surprisingly good. Now, I think that's just kind of a product of you change quarterbacks, you bring in a guy like Abdul Carter, and also the NFL offseason is just long. So everyone, like, just hope just has a chance to build. But they go out and get blown out by Washington, it's going to be like the sky is falling immediately. And this regime was hanging on by the skin of its teeth last January. They got a new lease on life. That's only going to extend so far. If the losses start piling up again, we're going to be calling for Jackson Dart. There's going to be calls for Dable's head. Like, they can't afford to struggle out of the gate. That doesn't mean they have to start with 4-0. But you look at their schedule, and there's not a lot of easy W's you can circle either. So you look at their start, 2 division games on the road, Washington and Dallas. They kind of need to come out with a win in one of those 2 games. So obviously, you know, at this point, you know, they're all in on, you know, being Washington. So, yeah, I think that's just, it's essential. Again, it's kind of an obvious thing. It's essential for every team. But I think particularly for this team, where it's in, kind of the delicate situation, it would be huge for them to come out and at least have a better effort. You can't be getting blown out like they have the last 2 openers.
They need 1 win out of those first 2 games. We're rooting for week 2.
I feel like they have a little bit, as far as, you know, Daboll's job security, there's a little bit of, like, in case of emergency, break glass and bench Russ and go to Dart. But, like, do they have to make the playoffs this year? Like, it just seems like there's a lot up in the air for Daboll, and maybe less so Joe Shane, but maybe just as much.
Yeah, no, listen, that's something I've been kind of trying to unpack. I'm honestly probably going to write a story for it next week, so spoilers for any Giants fans reading, because they're just in a weird spot where, again, they were hanging on by the skin of their teeth, win 3 games, it was their 100th season, they lost, like, was it 10 in a row at one point? It was an absolute disaster. And then when the owner has to come out, first make a statement that we're not firing these guys, that's never a good sign. And then John Mara's comments today, end of the season was, kind of running out of patience. I better be in a, a better mood this time next year. And like I said, then the offseason happens. People get, hey, Russell Wilson. Oh, Abdul Carter. Hey, Jackson Dart looks right in the preseason. And everyone gets excited. That excitement will go so fast. Believe me, I've been doing this for 10 years on this beat. I've seen a lot of August vibes turn into just October doom and gloom. So if they have another season like that, I don't really care about they drafted Dart. They give him time to develop. I mean, Pat Shurmur got fired after 2 years, and the second season was Daniel Jones' rookie year when he actually looked pretty good. So I think it's easy to sit here now and say, hey, they're not on the hot seat. But if they go 5-12, let's just say, that's 12 games. They're going to lose, and it's going to be long Sundays and long Monday mornings in that office. So they need to, I don't know if they need to make the playoffs. They need to at least win like 7 games to me and be a competitive team. And I think sort of the X factor in all this is Dart, because if you're 5-8 with Russ, and then you put Dart in for the last 4 games and he looks good, and even if you win 1 or 2 of those, maybe the end record doesn't look good, but you say, okay, like the rest of the roster is okay and Dart is ready, and we'll give these guys one more year to see if Dable can work some magic with him. But so I think he's kind of like the ace up their sleeve, that if things go bad with Russ, at least they can turn to Dart, and maybe he's the one to save everybody's jobs.
That's no pressure, kid. Go save all our jobs in New York City. And last thing, just for all the fantasy guys out there, what's the status of that Giants running back room? A lot of moving parts. Obviously, last year it seemed like the whole thing was about them letting Saquon go. But now they've drafted Scadaboo. You still have, I think, Tracy. How's that look?
Yeah, I mean, Tracy's the guy. Like, he had a really promising rookie year as a fifth-round pick. Devin Singletary got hurt, and Tracy scored from week 5, and was really productive. He had, 1,000 yards total from scrimmage, and that's, basically not playing the first 4 weeks. So they're really high on him. There's some still things he needs to improve on. The ball security was really bad last year. Pass protection, a little suspect, which, not unusual for a young running back. So I think that's why there's excitement of what Scadaboo can add, in the ideal scenario, it's going to be like a thunder and lightning type thing, where Tracy is a little more of the explosive, shifty guy, and then obviously Scadaboo, everyone's seen what college highlights earlier. I mean, just the way that guy runs. I'm curious to see how much that translates to the NFL, but he's going to try. He's going to come out and try and put his helmet through, Bobby Wagner in week 1. Like, that's just how he's going to play. We'll see if it translates, but Tracy, I think, will be the clear number 1 guy, and then Scadaboo, I think, you got to sprinkle in and kind of see what he can add. And then they have Singletary, who's kind of like the trusted vet that maybe on third downs you use for pass protection or stuff like that. But Tracy's definitely the number 1 guy.
Got it. Hey, Dan, thanks for the time man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. Thanks.
We'll see you next weekend in Landover, dude. That is Dan Duggan from The Athletic. You can give him a follow at dduggan, DUGGAN21. Joining us via the Rude Guest Hotline. Coming up at 11 a.m., we're going to hear from Terry McLaurin, some of his comments yesterday, and we're going to open them phone lines up. It's B. Mitch and Finley. Nobody go anywhere. The Giants went 3-14 last year. Mm-hmm. Now, they had abysmal quarterback play, but for folks that think a lot could change there, the Cowboys went 7-10 last year. And should have a healthy Dak Prescott.
They should have a healthy Dak Prescott, but as Nui stated the other day, they can't stop the run, they can't run the ball. That puts you in a tough predicament. And Dak Prescott normally gets hurt when he has to go out there and force and carry and hold on to the ball a little bit more. If they can't run the ball, what Dak will have to do?
So what is your order of finish in the NFC East?
Commanders, Eagles, Cowboys, Giants.
You think the Cowboys could be a wild card team?
I'm not going that high.
Just because of the
– I don't wish a lot of luck on Dallas at all, to be totally honest.
I'm not saying wish, but like –
No, but it's like when we talk about Dallas, we normally – it comes with some hate. But I just don't see if this stuff with Micah keeps going and – their defense already is in shambles. This could be a hell of a problem for them.
Dude, Micah's now at the airport, right? There's he very publicly is walking through DFW flying elsewhere. Now, I think it's worth pointing out if you go hang out at Dulles this afternoon about 4 or 5 o'clock, I bet you'll see plenty of Commanders fan players going elsewhere. Like, there's a reason I'm going to the beach this weekend. Like, the NFL closes down now for Labor Day weekend. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of players, it's the last time they get a chance to
chill,
whether it's fly home, see their family, fly to the beach.
Oh, hell, go check their houses, because a lot of them don't have a house in the city where they live. They have a house somewhere else.
So I don't think it's worth, like, drawing a great conclusion that Micah Parsons is flying out of Dallas right now.
I think Micah and Jerry Jones both doing the same thing. They love the spotlight. They love the limelight. And they're going to always be out there. Micah might do more, as much media as Jerry.
He might. Well,
to be honest with you.
I mean, he's still got his own podcast, all that stuff.
So every once in a while, I say, okay, man, they may be playing this whole little game up. But then I look at it, and I'm like, okay, his face didn't look like he was playing.
So I got this from one of the betting websites. To pick the exact order of finishes in the NFC East, the highest odds goes Philly, Washington, Dallas, Giants. What do you think the second highest odds are?
Putting Washington up?
Yep. Washington, Philly, Dallas, Giants.
Just like I just said.
I said yes.
Yeah. I'm saying that's what I picked earlier.
I'm surprised there's not an option with Dallas winning, but they don't have it.
They're like, why put it up there? Nobody going to bet on it.
It goes Philly, Washington, Dallas, Giants. Then the next highest odds, Washington, Philly, Dallas, Giants. Then it's swapping the Giants and Dallas in last place. And then it's swapping the Giants. I'm sorry. Then it's swapping the Cowboys and Washington for 2-3. The highest. I mean, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The eighth highest odds before you get to Dallas winning the division. And B, the 13th highest odds before you get to the Giants winning the division. So Vegas very much does not think any of that stuff's happening.
Yeah.
Which they're probably.
They listen to.
Let's hear from Terry McLaurin next. It's B. Mitch and Finley on the Fan.